Right.
Well, I told him about the event center and how it, you know, multi-purpose, multi-use room, and yeah, I told him the dispensary's down,
mm-hmm.
or the retail,
on the other
the
end.
Retail location is on the other end, and we have one in Coweta, and we're opening on February 14th.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting, though, that the municipal municipalities and some of their stances, the wide range of stances they took, and what you highlighted in particular, though, is in direct contrast to state law in 788, where it specifically outlines that there is not going to be any municipalities nor county seats that are going to make any additional regulations that would prohibit retail cannabis licensures, I mean dispensaries, from doing business like any other business would. And I mean, you really eloquently put out, how many corners can we drive in this metropolitan area that we can see a CVS and a Walgreens right across from the street from each other? No one thinks anything of it because they are both accordingly licensed. They are following the procedures that have been set forth for them. And it's no big deal. But just because of perception, despite what law has said, the perception has caused some of these municipal officials and local officials to think that they can take a stance in direct contradiction to state law.
Which was passed through a state question, which means it was enacted by the people.
By the people. You think that elected officials would most definitely want to go with the will of the people. And not only did we show in the 57% vote with 788 that it was the will of the people, but let's face it, more people voted for 788 than they did in the governorship.
Right, there were a lot of people.
That's
right.
A fact.
You're right. There were a lot of people who left the governor's race unmarked, but voted yes on state question 788. I thought that was interesting.
I mean, we were looking at one, and I've been dinged on this before, but it's one of the largest Oklahoma voting blocks we've seen before. And so, to me, no matter if politicians are politicians, but if you're seeking re-election, or if you actually take your oath of office seriously and you're going to reflect the will of the people if you're in a representative kind of position, then I think you would pay attention to, you know, over 500,000 Oklahomans,
right.
Especially in the Tulsa area, where I can show you the geopolitical breakdown and demographics of who voted for 788 for the state question, and was it a green or a red? Everyone put up the maps, and this Tulsa area, it's pretty
solid. Yes column, yeah.
And
most of the opposition was rural.
It was in the state, low population densities and rural, but this entire area was well supported, and we saw that with even with polls that were done with law enforcement in the Tulsa area. To our precincts, there were precincts in the Tulsa area that were voted in the 90 percentiles for 788. So, and like I said, all this can be checked. Anyone can go check it.
So, let's talk a little bit about what brought you into this business.
Yes, sir.
I already got her kind of story. She sort of happened into it because of she was interested in marijuana as an issue of civil liberty. And found out, wait, there's this whole medical thing going on here where these mothers are desperate to get medicine for their children. They're having seizures, and she learned about cannabidiol and all this kind of stuff. So she kind of fell into it from that direction. How did you come into it?
Well, likewise, I would say that I do support, as an individual, I do support adult use of cannabis from the aspect of liberty. However, I do come into this situation from a completely medicinal standpoint. And the reason for that, frankly, is because of my kids. I have four children, and my youngest two children have abnormal, very rare brain abnormalities, which at the time when we had my son, who was my third child, but the first child they ended up having more challenges, we didn't know there was a genetic link in between the two, and Carver ended up being born with about 85% of his brain missing, and because of that, of course, would had seizures because of that. And we were cleared later to have another child, possibly have another child, but we didn't know that it was just so rare that there was no test that could find the genetic linkage at that time. And so my daughter Lyra was born. And now she doesn't have the as severe of the challenges that my son Carver does, but once again, she has seizures as well. The differences in between the two, though. Of course, Carver is a lot older. He's about to be 7 now. He was prescribed pharmaceuticals not too long after he was born. He was prescribed 2 pharmaceuticals. Although they helped control his seizures, they did not eliminate his seizures. The thing that was hard to watch, Russell, was that to see, my wife had pointed this out earlier today. My son is 6, almost 7 years old, and he has the liver enzymes of a man in his 60s.
Because the damage from the pharmaceuticals.
Exactly. So elevated liver enzymes, we do quarterly blood draws for Carver because of this. Well, and it still didn't eliminate the seizures. So we're taking organ damage, and the seizures haven't been eliminated. We knew there was a safer alternative out there. However, at the time, there was nothing on the books in Oklahoma, not for hemp, not CBD, not cannabis, anything whatsoever. And so that prompted me to start working legislatively to at least try to assuage some of those things, because we knew the research was out there even at the time for CBD and hemp. And my goodness gracious, I mean, our own federal government, you know, put out patent number 6630507, which claims the medicinal benefits of the derivatives of cannabis, all cannabis, not just hemp, but tetrahydrocannabinol all the way down to your CBD chains. So this prompted us, you know, at first I tried to rework the definition of what hemp was defined as in the state of Oklahoma with Senate Bill 704, and eventually you end up getting into 788. And find like-minded individuals like Joanna and others that, despite why they came into the subject, they all had this center core that we all should have the ability to take care of someone that we love and give them dignity and the medicine that doesn't harm them. And that if we are truly, you know, in this nation, that if we were endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The first one that was mentioned was life, and I think we were all born with that, that we should be able to take care of ourselves and be able to provide ourselves with clean, non-toxic medicine. And you keep pushing further ahead of that, and you find more and more people, families that had to move from Oklahoma and to go other states just to be able to find medicine. And the whole time I'm sitting here watching my son and my daughter, and to a point that we even bought land in Arkansas because we thought Arkansas was going to go next to us. Of course, Arkansas messed up. And at the end of the day, Russell, almost feels like no matter if I think of this as, you know, predestined or if it was just circumstance, it doesn't matter at this point. I feel like that we are destined to try to make sure that we can do a couple of things with this company. First, that we can provide a medicine or product that is safe enough and effective enough that I could give it to my own children and feel perfectly fine and happy about that.
In fact, perhaps better.
It much better.
Than the pharmaceutical stuff that you were giving them.
Much,
before.
Much better. And I'll touch on that here in just a second. But besides just doing that, making it accessible to people, currently hemp oils in the nation are very expensive. We have used previously one of the national leading brands that is, it's a good product. I'm not picking on their product whatsoever, but it is very expensive. And Laura and I are in a fortunate position that despite insurance not paying for any of those kinds of treatments for medications, we could still pay that out of pocket. Most families just aren't in that situation, and we're very recognizing of that.
Why is hemp oil so expensive? Hemp is pretty easy to grow. My understanding is it's practically grows like a weed.
Yes.
And I do realize it's, you know, there's been restrictions on and off over the years and blah, blah, but we're talking about hemp here, industrial hemp. We're not talking about cannabis.
No, we're not talking about
cannabis. So why in God's name is hemp oil that expensive? Why?
Banking, because even though hemp recently has been, you know, rescheduled because of the farm bill, it is still considered at a national level within banking to be a tier, what's called a tier three cannabis dollar. And so, yes, so it really comes down to banking in this situation makes it very difficult for anyone that's even in the hemp realm to be able to conduct business. And usually that you'd find institutions that would charge a company anywhere from 2 to 5% of whatever their monthly volume was in banking fees. So you can imagine that'd be a pretty, you know, a pretty sizable amount of money that's only going to be passed along down to the end line of the consumer.
That sounds to me like just an excuse to put a gun to people's heads, but that's just my, you know, admittedly somewhat uninformed opinion. But this,
and
what
greed
this,
too is the other side of it too.
And greed, obviously. Yes. But what? Well, that's why you put guns to people's heads, right?
It's greed. Yeah.
All right. So all this goes back to, I mean, this whole nightmare scenario that you're talking about right now goes back to the federal government to this day listing cannabis as a Schedule I narcotic with no medical benefit, even though you're saying the federal government issued a patent.
They're in direct contradiction, yes.
Which legally and officially recognizes the medical benefits of...
They actually own the patent.
The federal government owns the patent.
They own it. It's not that they issued it. They own it.
How do you patent a plant?
Well, that's a great question for God.
Who should be holding that patent, right? Because I don't care what higher power you believe in. If you believe in any higher power, this is a plant.
Yes.
It was created, not domestically somehow invented by some guy or gal, whatever. It's a plant.
The patent is for cannabis as an antioxidant and neuroprotectant. Uh-huh. And I think it's limited in that. I think that's the scope of that patent. Of course, we know it serves a lot of other purposes.
But I still don't understand how you can patent the plant. It's like I'm going to patent oxygen.
How is how are they able to do it is a mystery, I think, to anyone. It defies common sense and logic. It just defies common sense and logic that you could claim something as intellectual property that you didn't put any intellectual. You didn't put any intellectual property into in the first place. You have no claim or stake into it. So, that seems a little bit interesting in the first place. But facts being the facts, the United States government owns 663-0507, which is the patent on cannabis and tetrahydrocannabinol being a medical treatment for specific disorders that they list, which is within neuropathies. They list out Parkinson's. So this is very specific, and anyone that has the time can look it up and read it for themselves.
All right. So we touched a little bit about what this legislature may or may not do, but there are certainly several bills pending, some of which I'm guessing you would find objectionable.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe others not, but there are also signs that some lawmakers at least are taking this seriously and trying to be equitable, trying to help provide whatever benefit medical cannabis can provide to the people of this state and to business owners.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you trepidatious about what this legislature is going to do? Are you hopeful? Are you confident? Where are you at on that spectrum?
I'm cautious still. I have slight optimism. Just to do a little rewind on just time, everything was laid out on 788 for a very specific purpose, which was to make the government do their job. And if we, if authorship of 788 and the people that were surrounding it didn't include into that language forcing the government to do what they were supposed to do, to actually legislate and to enforce the laws of this state, we wouldn't be where we're at right now. It was designed with a quick implementation so the government would have to do it. Unfortunately, in design, we wanted to go to primary, have the election in primary, so that they would have to come back. Since we knew it was obviously a state question, it's not a constitutional amendment, they were going to come back and give framework to that. We'd worked really diligently last session with John Eccles and at the time Representative John Paul Jordan and with House Bill 3846. We felt like we got a lot of distance there. But things shook out the way they did in the political season. We have the vote, and we fully expected that they would come back in a special session and do their diligence and make sure that this that 788 was properly framed for the people when it went into implementation.
Didn't happen.
They chose not to do that. The governor and Congress both chose not to do that. And probably, if you know, I'm guessing, you know, because November was right around the corner, and so they were in double jeopardy from having kind of this standing demographic to having this new demographic that they saw. Well, what ended up happening? We have a lot of new faces.
There are about 40% of the legislature.
A lot of new faces. That does give me a little bit of that optimism there. Overall, I think what it shows me is this. I will say that out of my time of being up at the Capitol over the last couple of years, I do feel a lot more hope that they are going to represent the will of the people. However, there's been some bills that have been brought forth that are a complete juxtaposition to the spirit of 788 and just frankly to the law that was written in 788. I'd like to think this is probably a lot of pandering to, you know, a rural base that didn't vote for 788. And if that is the situation, then that representative is actually representing his constituency or her constituency. That I do not have a problem with. But the fact is the majority of the state voted for this, overwhelming majority of the state made this a law. We can't debate the points of, is cannabis good, is it not good? That's done now. That's really done. The fact is 57% of the people in Oklahoma voted for it. We have legal operations that are already happening. And if municipalities and politicians want to stay in an old mindset that frankly put a lot more people in prison for a plant that saves lives, that old guard needs to change. And it is changing now. That gives me hope.
All right, so let's quickly, because I have taken way more of you guys' time than I'm
asking. Oh, no problem.
Let's talk a little bit about this particular building that we're in right now. I mean, do you guys have only the whole building?
Yes, sir. We have the whole facility.
And you are looking for businesses to move in?
Sure.
Joanna was telling me, you know, 788 friendly. In other words, they're not going to mind being next to a dispensary, but they don't have to be directly related to cannabis or
anything
not at all. Like that. So what did you picture when you put together this facility?
When we were discussing the Flower Craft, like the Event Center and the Flower Craft District or Flower District, is really just an identification of the needs within the community. For so long, because of Prohibition, there is a lack of education, a lack of knowledge, just within the community, of proper medicine, how to utilize medicine. But not only that, but Oklahoma is a state that, you know, where patients can grow their own medicine. Well, do we want people at home trying to grow medicine and they don't know how to do it at all? You know, because we have to keep in thought in mind that cannabis is an outstanding plant and it takes all the nutrients from the ground that you'll give it. So if you're using improper nutrients, that will come out into your medicine as well, just like it would with any other vegetable. It's just cannabis takes a lot more nutrients than a lot of others. So we want to provide classes, and so this is a good, safe community where everyone feels welcomed, and that they can learn. And so things that we have going on in this facility isn't necessarily has anything to do whatsoever with the retail sales or anything like that. It doesn't. It just provides a space for other people within the community of like minds to be able to come in and share their experiences and their knowledge with others in a wide array of activities. Of course, we're going to have we'll have some yoga and meditation in here as well, but even Bible classes, some monthly Bible classes, because they're, you know, a lot of people might not know, but there are a lot of Christian conservatives that supported 788, and they would like to have a place too that they can all talk together and share. but as well as painting classes, you know, everything that you can think of, we could house that here.
It's interesting that there is a serious line of historic thought that the oil that was used to anoint Jewish kings like David and Saul was cannabis mm-hmm. oil.
I believe that was referenced as cannabisim in Hebrew. But
there's a clue.
Yeah, I
I don't know. But there is serious research that
there is.
They've eliminated, well, it wasn't olive oil and it wasn't this and it wasn't that, and they finally combined it. Well, you know, they grew a lot of hemp. And knew of some of the restorative and medicinal properties of this amazing plant, which can be food, which can be clothing, which can be medicine. I mean, it's a pretty amazing plant.
Right.
Any way you look at it. All right, so the dispensary, I've read that there are a lot of dispensary licenses out there. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a fiercely competitive business coming out of the gate. Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, land rush type stuff. So how do you set yourself apart? Is the Flowercraft Center sort of a way to kind of do that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a compressed market. Anyone that has any business sense at all knows that they're going into a compressed market, or layman's terms, it's a barn burner. That's what's coming. I'm not as much worried about that as maybe I've done a lot of diligence in the space. I feel fairly comfortable with it. Yes, the things that are going to separate out other businesses or other dispensaries is going to help with people, but mostly it's having good relationships within the community. Honest people that, like say with growers, that aren't trying to gouge their retail establishments, because at the end of the day, once again, it comes down to the patient or the end consumer and pricing. And so for us, it's been, let's make partnerships, find good people doing good things, provide them the support that they need, that some of the information they might not know or expertise that they might know, say within taxation, or high-end business skills.
Banking.
Yes, banking. I mean, all of the pitfalls that are here. And even my wife and I have joked that if we ever wanted, and we had other businesses besides this, but if we wanted to start a business again, just one business, that was non-regulated, boy, that'd be a piece of cake. Do you mean I could walk just into any bank and just start a business account? That would be easy. But there is a lot of difficulties in this sphere. I foresee what's about to, you know, come in this next year is that we're going to start to get flooded with cannabis products from growers as they start to come online. Because right now we don't have any kind of testing within the framework in Oklahoma, there's going to be a lot of growers and dispensaries that aren't going to test because they're not made to, because it's costly. And that's a shame. I do not care. My wife and I do not care. None of us on the team care if it's costly. It's just prudence that we have to test. And so we went ahead and things that separate our company out, we put mandatory testing on all of our products all the way down to terpenes and the billions. So, and it's demonstrated on test. You can scan the QR code. You can see the batch number right in front of you on the screen or your mobile phone, as well as we start working on making sure that we have good peer-to-peer relationships, and everyone that works with us are well-trained. We just got through doing a complete weekend training, and this week we've still continued management training on. So we want to make sure that when we open up on February 14th, that all of our staff are knowledgeable, friendly, and take care of others. We're in a secured environment that you feel safe to come in, and it's nice enough that you could take your grandma in, and she would probably find the right medicine for her and not feel like she is in an awkward spot at all.
Or hanging out on the corner scoring from Bubba.
Exactly.
Out of the back of the van. All right, so I was going to ask something. Oh, burning issue. Bud tenders? Budistas? we're trying to come up with what are you going to call these folks?
I don't necessarily like...
Medicine men?
Yeah, well, I don't like
nope.
the necessarily
well,
like
the... women. That won't work. I'm sorry.
You know, I don't necessarily like the term bud tender. Most people understand what that is. We look at all of our employees as really... Here's the thing with them. They are just conduits of love. That's really what they are. Here we are trying to make sure that there is a medicine that's available to people that's accessible to them at low pricing with a much higher standard of quality than everyone else. But the basis for it, and what I think separates our company from any, probably just about anyone else that I've seen out there, is, and it's not me, it's everyone that's a part of our team, comes from a place of compassion. They've had real circumstances in their lives. They've seen what it is to suffer. They've seen what it is to care and love for other people that can't care for themselves. And I think just from the intent, it is the smallest seed, isn't it? The smallest seed that we've started this company with is that we're doing it for love, and we're doing it to help others and make a point. My wife and I, neither one of us take a salary from this company, and we've already publicly declared we will never take a salary from this company. This is a labor of love. So I'm fortunate that I have been given the opportunity in my life to make medicine for my children, and that's all I need.